Good morning. Welcome everyone to our third webinar in the Avatar's Journey series. Today we have Sister Gayatri and Sister Judy as our spiritual resources, and we have Brother Eric, who is from Montreal, who is going to be moderating the discussion. So a few things before we hear invaluable insights from Sister Gayatri and Sister Judy is that if you have any questions for either of the spiritual resources, you can type it in your questions box. So make sure you locate your questions box, and if you have any questions, you can type it in. And so today's program is going to be that Sister Gayatri will speak for about 20 minutes, and then Sister Judy will speak, and then we will take questions from the participants. So, Brother Eric, it's yours.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. Good evening. It's lovely to connect again the whole world in a beautiful way, and I think we've been avatarizing ourselves for the past few weeks. So it's been lovely. We're all becoming avatars by the end of this program. And I think we're particularly happy to welcome Sister Gayatri and Sister Judy today. And maybe some newer brothers and sisters don't know as well all the work that Sister Gayatri and Sister Judy have been doing for many years, I think, to help the world, the Western world in particular, to admire and to appreciate Baba's jewels in so many ways. I think you've been writing beautiful books. You've been helping us in our journey in reflecting very brilliantly on Baba's knowledge. So I think this is another opportunity to hear your insight. So good morning, Gayatri Ben in Queens, in New York, so Queen of New York, and Queen in Peace Village, a different environment, Sister Judy. So welcome to both of you, and maybe as Sherilyn mentioned, if anyone has questions, please write them in the box. We'll be happy to answer them. So maybe we can start with an opening remark by Sister Gayatri, followed by Sister Judy. So Gayatri, it's yours.
Thank you, Eric. It's nice to be with all of you and to share some insights about this beautiful practice of the Avatar's journey. I'm particularly struck by the deepening, just practicing, let alone looking at attainments, but just the actual practice has resulted in a very deepening experience for me, particularly in relation to yoga. So I'm hoping that it is the same for everyone else practicing the Avatar's journey. Also, working with the formulas for me, with the triads, with the three connecting points, became something that allowed me to see that whatever is the method Baba is offering is actually something that connects to this word that he uses. It's called completion. So it is almost bringing the three aspects together and connecting them. You feel that the method allows for something complete in the soul. And so these were two of the points I wanted to start as my opening comments, and of course we will deepen it as the conversation continues.
That is called very short but very sweet. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Sister Judy, you want to share a few thoughts maybe to open as well in the session?
Sure. So, good morning. I've just been really, first, just gratitude to Sister Shireen and her team for the, I know they've enjoyed it, but the thoughtful behind-the-scenes work to find these nuggets in Baba's Murlis and to align them in this way and share them so that everyone can be engaged together. There's something about doing this as collective that's very powerful, and their selections are really nice, and I like the descriptions, so all of that, lots of gratitude for that they go to that trouble. I know that requires a lot, let alone putting together the call, the webinars, etc. You know, I've been I have loved the experience, and it's made me very aware of the move from contemplating something to being in the experience of something. And so these different triads over these last couple of weeks, and I noticed that in some cases I would spend time really thinking about it, you know, thinking about the particular words or thinking about the particular experiences, what they conjure up. And kind of deepening my understanding of them, enjoying the words, etc. And then there was the moment when I needed to move out of the thinking about them and into the experience of them. It's something Sister Mohini has referred to as a difference between thinking about peace and thinking in peace, you know, where the move from considering something sort of with the thoughts to having the experience of it. So what I do with these triads usually is I usually start more in the thinking about them. You know, what's being proposed here? What is it that the Murlis have offered up here as points of awareness? And I it's sort of a learning mode, I suppose. You know, really looking at the words and the concepts and what they mean, etc. But then after I've circled them a few times, then sliding over into the experience of them, where really I'm no longer thinking about them. I am sitting in that consciousness. So that's one of the things that's been on my mind relative to these. And then, of course, this morning, the ones that we're looking at. But that's for openers. That's enough, I think.
Thank you, Judy. I think it's a beautiful opportunity we have to have both of you, because what we want to also understand is not just how to apply the formula or how to use this method, the thing, but also to clarify where we're going with this kind of programs. And we've been hearing so many comments from all around the world, and people have been really engaging with the project very, very deeply. So maybe briefly before we start, and I know there's already two questions, and for those who have joined the webinar just the last few minutes, please all are very welcome to ask questions and writing them in the little box, so please feel free to do so. But before we go into some questions, both from Gayatri and Judy, what do you feel is going to be the deeper process of going through a program like this on a personal level, but also on a collective level? I know Sister Moini touched on it on the first webinar, creating a pilgrimage place at every center. What do you feel is the bigger picture on this project? Gayatri?
I think that anything that is connected to the deeper spiritual track results in benefit for all. So I feel that even when we do Mansa Seva at any point of time in our lives, the mind, one singular mind, is connecting to the thought waves of a collective mind coming together, doing the same thing, sending peace to the world like we do on the third Sunday of every month. So it's having an impact collectively. It's having an impact on the whole. But I feel that with this kind of an initiative, what it's calling on us as Raj Yogis to do is to somehow go onto a deeper track. And so not to experience our spirituality in a fragmented way, but to experience our spirituality in a holistic way, in a cohesive way, and in an integrative way. And so I feel once we are able to do that, then we, as Raj Yogis, will become the living, moving museums, lighthouses that Baba talks about. And so our way of being becomes the means to serving, and not serving gives us a sense of who we are. But who we are in terms of I am a soul, I am a complete soul, I am a divine soul, I am an instrument of Baba, that is the awareness that becomes natural and then radiates into everything I do and becomes a means of service. So it's a little bit like being as a way of serving. And that will have an impact on everyone collectively, in terms of the vibrations that I radiate, not just at the centers, but anywhere I am. And so I see, for me, practically, this avatar crossing down and walking the earth, for instance. Every footprint I make on the earth, that footprint, when others step into that footprint that I've left, they are crossing up. So my actual footprint, if I'm in the awareness of being an avatar, is actually becoming a means for others to cross up. And it was a little bit like this experience I'm having with this practice is a little bit like when I was in Jerusalem. And as I was walking the earth in Jerusalem, I kept thinking, oh my God, Abraham must have walked this earth. And so I'm walking in the footsteps of Abraham at that moment. It was a kind of a surreal experience. And so it's like when Raj Yogis walk the earth, it's that their footprints become the means for others rising to whatever level of awareness they have had as they imprinted their footprints on the earth. So I feel that even though it's a singular practice, each one is being asked to go into the deeper track of what soul consciousness is and to develop our soul consciousness as a whole being, as a Raj Yogi, a unified being. that becomes the power behind which, or the strength that Shakti that Baba talks about, to radiate benefit into the world and to bring benevolence into people's lives without having to convince them of anything or without having to make them feel different from you. It's almost as though you are connecting to them at a soul conscious level and so building the feelings of being of one family, as it were. But it also allows for a very smooth connection to Baba. It becomes like a living connection with Baba. I am living my life naturally connected to Baba, who is guiding me along this path. And so I feel that if he's guiding me along the path, he's also guiding many others along the path. And so it's not just me walking the path, but they're all his children walking the path, and we may be at different points on the path, but we're still connected to the one. So it removes from us any feelings or thoughts of separation. It is as if, we're together, we're engaged together, we're entangled together, we are, walking the path together. So it's this togetherness. Rather than oneness, it's a togetherness for me.
It's very nice to hear that sincerity. I think we all want to feel connected as well, and along with our individual journey. Judy, do you want to add a few thoughts to this big picture approach?
That was very nice. I like this idea of in Jerusalem walking in Abraham's footsteps. That's beautiful.
That's how I feel. I'm walking in Gayatri's footsteps, and just wonderful feeling. So you're doing very well. You know, just...
this question, where are we going with this? One simple thought is that I suspect that it is sharpening everyone's practice. You know, because of course we have Amrit Vela, we go to class together, and yet sometimes we can find our practice to be wandering a little bit. Not that we're not showing up, but that the focus of what we're doing may not be as strong as we'd like or as clear as we'd like. And I feel like one benefit of this is it's suggesting a way to practice, you know, taking the Murlis and using them as a foundation for contemplation, for churning, for creating certain states of awareness, etc. I think there's a and conversation. I mean, I hear the various centers I'm in, I hear people talking about their practice. And so I think in that way, it's providing a real benefit. On this point that Gayatri was making about the togetherness, the last few years we have been working on Call of the Time with one of our contacts, Peter Singhi, on silence retreats. The retreats are for people who are influential in the field and how they can use their thoughts to support the networks they're serving in. And one of the aspects we've tried is coming together in silence for periods of an hour or so, several times during the day. And at the end, when they talk about what meant the most to them, it's often that, you know, the sitting together, even though nothing was said. So I feel like this is a version of that. You know, we are sitting around the world in the same quality of thought, considering the same ideas or the same experiences, and as we do that, we come into a kind of alignment. And there's a beauty in that, you know. Beyond our practice, there's a beauty in the fact that we're in the same kind of thought. You know, we're sitting in Amrit Vela and we're considering, we're experimenting with this bodiless state, with what it means to be soul conscious, with what it means to be incorporeal. And then as we shift to the next one, we move our contemplation that way and our experience that way. So I think there's a unifying effect of this that is really a lift. You know, I feel like it's really, really giving us a lift. The last thing was something yesterday. We were in Manhattan and we were talking about unlimited love. And Someone we've known for many years, who's a friend of Dottie Janke's and a friend of ours, said that for her, what unlimited love meant was being aware that God is responding to me all the time. You know, that seeing the fortunate things that come into my life is an aspect of his response to me. And I thought that was beautiful, you know, this noticing God's presence. And I feel like this kind of a practice where we're constantly turning the mind to God together in the same ways, on the same ideas, I think it does, I don't know what you would call it, it creates sort of an atmosphere of alertness, additional alertness that we're all watching the same things together and more likely to be noticing this divine presence in our lives, to be noticing the ways in which God is showing up, the ways in which we're getting immediate fruit, the ways in which our lives are fortunate. So I feel there's a lot of benefit, like instant benefit. I think there will be long-term kind of deeper benefit as well. I loved Sister Mohini's point on the pilgrimage place. And I think it's also bringing instant fruit right now.
Great, thank you. So let's go into a very practical application of all this and from a bigger picture to exactly practicing the point, for example, for today or the formula for today. So you both have to go into your Dottie Janke's mode, and I'll give you two questions for the price of one. And they're related to the practice of incorporeal bodiless and soul conscious state. So one is asking, please discuss use body's sense organs in soul consciousness. So please discuss use body's sense organs in soul consciousness. And another soul asks, bodiless and incorporeal. Incorporeal to me means bodiless. Hope someone can answer soon. So for all those who may be lost between all these different stages, any of you can clarify incorporeal, bodiless, soul conscious using the sense organs in the context also of the formula and how you practice it and how you integrate it, or how, what are you looking for in mixing those three words? Maybe we start with you this time, Judy.
Okay, so when I work with these three states, the bodiless state, the soul conscious state, and the incorporeal, I'm experiencing them as sequential. So that first I become aware of myself, the soul in this body. And the question about the bodiless and incorporeal, I do think there's a distinction here, and I think the explanation that's offered in the Avatar's Journey text is actually really helpful. So if I'm in my excuse me, so I'm in my normal consciousness and I decide I'm going to turn inside, my first move turning inside is becoming aware of myself as the soul in the body. In other words, I don't make the leap necessarily up to the incorporeal world and to forgetting this world, but I simply make that first move of becoming aware of myself as this energy, this light. Baba has 1,000 metaphors for this, moving in this body. So I'm aware of both of these things at once. This is probably the car and driver example that is so common in India. And that alone is beneficial. Even if that's all you did, that is beneficial. But then this move to soul consciousness in the body, to me, this is what allows us to be karma yogis, because we become, it's a deeper, sort of richer consideration. You know, you're thinking about, you're experiencing what are the qualities of the soul. And sometimes this is explained that, well, if I want to experience Baba's love, then let me first start with the love in the soul. You know, let me become aware of myself, the soul, as a loving being. Let me take that virtue or that aspect of the soul and with that turn my attention to Baba. And then that becomes the basis of my link with Baba. And then this idea that I'm using the sense organs. So, in other words, you're still in the life. You're still on the ground. This is about, you know, spirituality is from our perspective, from the Raja Yogi perspective, it's not about leaving the world. It's not about going off on a mountain somewhere and forgetting your world, your family, your job, whatever. So you're in the body, you're in the world, but you're in the world in the consciousness of being a soul and with the qualities of the soul. And in that awareness, you do karma yoga, you engage with the world, you do what you have to do. And I think this is an aspect of our service, that actually we are serving when we are in this state, this soul conscious state. It affects the way that we show up. So yes, we're still, you know, we're either actively doing service or we're doing something more mundane, but still, because we're in that consciousness, it becomes service. And then this final state, the incorporeal state, to me, this is really a state, this state of, sometimes Baba talks about being absorbed in him, lost in love, you know, the experience of being, you know, you're unaware of the, at this point, that you're unaware of the body, you're unaware of the material world, and you are really absorbed in that dead silence, in that sweetness of Baba's company, in that state. So I think they're quite different, and I do see them as sequential, really. Although you can go to one, but I think they work well as a sequence. And then, of course, the sense of safety that's offered here is the attainment. I think that comes naturally when you do it.
And Gayatri Ben, how has it been for you, journaling with those three words, and how do you relate to those and your experience and the feeling you have towards this bodiless, incorporeal, and using the sense organs in soul consciousness?
Like Judy, I, in practicing the triad, this particular triad that today we're also doing, I became aware of the distinctions. Usually we collapse everything, consider yourself to be a soul, and look at yourself as a point of light in the center of the forehead, and that can become very mechanical. But this kind of practice allows us to go into the deeper track, but also allow us to realize that there are distinctions in soul consciousness. And so for me, the Ashariri, which is being in the body, but being bodiless, aware of myself as a bodiless being while in the body, I experience myself having a relationship with the body, a relationship with my senses. And so one is that I control my senses or my senses control me. But when I'm in the Ashariri state, the bodiless state, while being in the body, it's no longer controlled, because yoga is more relationship. Yoga is more integration. Yoga is more working with a unifying principle. So when I am connecting in yoga to my physical senses, there is a different awareness I have that I'm bringing to my senses. So I'm bringing the spiritual awareness to the way I would see things. So I'm no longer seeing with my physical eyes when I'm Ashariri. But the soul is using, the bodiless being is using the eyes to see. So I'm not controlled by what I'm seeing in the external world, but I am having a relationship with something deep inside of I, the soul, and that is coming to the awareness with which I'm seeing with newness whatever is happening in the outside world. It's the same with my listening. When I'm Ashariri and I am using the sense of hearing, the sense, the audio sense to listen, it is then again, am I hearing the noise? Am I hearing the sound? Is that what is coming into me? Or am I making meaning and listening deeply with meaning to what someone else is saying to me? And am I listening with to understand them, to empathize with them, to, am I having compassionate hearing then? the same with words. So that for me is what the Ashariri stage is reconnecting to my senses and my sense organs and my body with a deep sense of this unifying principle of yoga, but also with that deep sense of respect for it, that here is my body allowing me to do, going to go through a transformative process, but I have to pay attention to the body as well. That for me is the Ashariri state. The soul conscious state is actually very interesting for me to look at the distinctions of it, because the soul conscious state goes beyond the trajectory of awareness, attitude, vision, action. But it is the total consciousness, the full whole consciousness of the soul. So when I was experiencing the Dehi Abhimani stage, the soul conscious stage, I was feeling this alignment of my thought, of my mind, of my intellect, and of my sanskaras. So they were all like aligned. And so I experienced myself as a full consciousness of being a soul. So I was not like my mind was somewhere else and my intellect is telling the mind not to do that and my sanskaras are creating havoc. No, I aligned them, and maybe the alignment just brought me back to one of my original qualities. And usually for me, what I noticed, the alignment aligned me with the purity within me, with you know, the love within me, that pure love within me. And so the alignment was taking its strength from this love. And maybe because we had the dialogue on love, I was thinking a lot about unlimited love yesterday and the day before. And so the soul consciousness was naturally moving into my inner state of love. Now, the Dehi stage, which is the incorporeal stage, to me there was a distinction there, and it was to do with the seed stage that Baba talks about. And there was a beautiful line that he gave in the Murli, and he said, Baba is always the incorporeal being. He is the supreme being. He never takes a body. He doesn't even take a subtle body. So he is always in the state of being incorporeal. So in order for you to connect to Shiv Baba, the soul, need to also be in that incorporeal stage. And so being an incorporeal soul is like what Baba says, experience the seed form stage in which everything is merged in you, the soul, as a seed. And so you have the potential for all your 84 births, but it is now in its seed form, in that incorporeal stage, and you're connecting to the incorporeal Father in the incorporeal world, and that is where, you know, optimum transformation takes place. Now, as Judy says, and I do support this, it's not that you're leaving the reality of the world that you're living in, and you are going to different realms, you know, and traveling. You're not space traveling and outer space and beyond space traveling, but you're very much grounded in the process of transformation from body consciousness into soul consciousness here, in the here and now, in this world, in this body, but you are aware of the distinctions of the different levels of what it means when we go through moving from a body conscious stage to a soul conscious stage. And so that was my experience of this formula.
All right. So I think we're, if I'm correct, we're really tapping into an amazing, crucial point in our Brahmin life, because even after so many years, and I know you're both very active and busy sisters, like many of us are, and I think it's still the key question in our Brahmin life to redefine and redefine again full consciousness, bodiless stage, and corporeal stage. So it's fascinating. If we have more time, we can come back on this at the end. But for now, we have quite a few questions, so you'll have to put yourself in the gear of a little talk show here, and maybe we'll try to go through quite a few a bit more faster. If anyone else has more questions, please do write them up. This is your last chance. I've seen that we have received about 156 questions, but only three have written them down. So we'll go through writing down. Another question here about mostly expanding on the Gyan aspect and the Hindi words that are used to present them. So it's a beautiful question we received from Trinidad. And it says, please accept greetings of peace and happiness from the Trinidad family and coordinator Sister Hamilata. This is feedback from Brother Kem, who has participated in this avatar formula. Brother Kem has received an enormous amount of renewed enthusiasm for this well-planned avatars program and recommends same to all BK students. Brother Kem has been particularly inspired by Sister Mohini's discourse and in particular the class on Barakat Ki Bhavna. This has created the deeper realization to attain the Satyam Shivam Sundaram stage of beatitude, the higher stage of attitude, vritti. Please send this Sister Gayatri and Sister Judy so they can expand power of spiritual attitude, vritti, and its relationship with vision drishti that is inherent in the creation of the new world, srishti. So I repeat the question. Please send this Sister Gayatri and Sister Judy so they can expand on the power, I guess, of spiritual attitude, the vritti, and its relationship with vision drishti that is inherent in the creation of the new world, srishti. I may not be pronouncing properly the words, but how does one take drishti and how does one give drishti? How does one take drishti and how one does give drishti? Anyone of you wants to start, Gayatri or Judy?
So you've got two questions here, right, Eric? The question on giving and receiving drishti is a separate question from Brother Ken, is that it?
Yes, because the first one was more about, expand on the attitude of the difference, I guess, or the stage of the attitude that they were talking about, the high stage of attitude, vritti. Uh-huh. That has created a deeper realization to attain that stage. So please send these, expand the power of spiritual attitude, vritti, and its relationship with vritti that is inherent in the creation of srishti. So vritti, drishti, srishti.
Right, okay. I will also say a few words and then ask Gayatri to weigh in. So this sequence of awareness, attitude, vision, action, world, we've used it so many times because it's so useful in connecting the spiritual consciousness with what's going on in the world. And we've actually heard the conversation at Call of the Time in reverse, that the world we have is the world we've created with our own awareness, right? Now we're running it the other way, that to create the world we want, we have to sustain the awareness, attitude, vision, action that we want to create, right? So it runs both ways, actually, this sequence. I was thinking when Gayatri was talking about hearing that actually even though this sequence of attitude refers to vision, I suspect it refers to all of our sensing, so hearing as well. Baba talks a lot about criminal vision, but I suppose you could have criminal hearing as well, right? You could listen to things in a way that is deficient or degraded or whatever. And so it starts with awareness. I mean, it starts with exactly what these three states we've been talking about these last two, we're practicing these last 2 days, the bodiless state, the soul conscious state, the incorporeal state. You're talking about cultivating an inner awareness of ourselves that are most elevated, ourselves that are most aware. We're most aware of who we are in excellence, you might say, who we are in our most pure consciousness. And so that practice, and the more we do it, I think the more we dwell there as opposed to having to go there over and over. So when our awareness is that way, then the attitude is automatically affected. And the attitude, I always think of attitude as an orientation of the mind. You know, we talk about an attitude of equality or an attitude of kindness or an attitude of
mean-spiritedness or whatever, that attitude, that orientation of the mind, that predisposition of the mind to see something or to experience something in a certain way, to think about something in a certain way, it's informed by the awareness. So a body-conscious awareness is going to create a mind that has a low level of thought and a low level, kind of a degraded orientation. It may have a habit of anger, it may be, you know, it may be critical, it may be gossipy, it may be worse. But when the awareness is elevated and the attitude then is elevated, then whatever you see, and I would say even whatever you hear, whatever you sense, it's coming to you through that elevated state. So the linkages between these three, I always have experienced it as really automatic. In other words, I can go ahead and work on making my action better, but that is a behavioralist self-correction is going to be much more limited than if I elevate my awareness and remain in that awareness, which then flows to the attitude and flows to the sensing and the action. So that's how I would see it. And then with the giving and taking drishti, I think of it as more sharing drishti, that we're in the consciousness, we're in remembrance of Baba, we're in soul consciousness, remembering Baba, and then that comes through our vision, just as I was just talking about.
So, Gayatri, do you want to add something very briefly, or should I put you another question, because questions are squeezing in, and because of time, it's good if we can answer them all. Do you want to add just maybe a few words to what Judy just shared, Gayatri, and then I'll take you with another question right after that?
Okay, just one thought, and that is, when Sister Mohini spoke of Behad Bhavana, I think that was the word she used, it was more that in order for this trajectory of attitude and vision and creation of our world to work, it cannot just come from an awareness or a consciousness of knowledge that this is what Baba says, this is the method he's given, and this is how we have to go ahead and do it with this strategic spiritual plan. But what she was saying, we have to take it into our its spiritual hearts, and the heart has to open. And in the opening of the heart, all the divisions and the separations and everything would kind of dissolve. And then what would come out of that dissolving of everything, you would call it a cleansing or a purification, is those pure, behad, unlimited bhavana. And I think it is this that would then create the subtle flow of pure spiritual energy based on behad bhavana through the trajectory and into the world. I just wanted to add that bit of what I understood when she used the word behad bhavana, that nothing will move unless we have that unlimited bhavana as the push, as the unclogging force of the trajectory.
Very good. I think that after this Avatars program, we can publish a new edition of Hindi dictionary, and I think we should redefine many Hindi words in such a new context and a new experiential level as well. So I think many of us will relearn all these Hindi words. There's quite a few questions, but one interesting about really the ideology a little bit of the concept as well, in terms of, can we really have Baba change us, or is drama taking care of it? So the question is, can you please expand on Baba being the almighty authority? The drama is predestined, and Baba helps us transform ourselves and transform the world in the confluence age. Are there any other aspects about being the almighty authority?
I think the word authority is an interesting term, because when we use the word authority, perhaps in the world, we are meaning someone who knows everything and someone who can do everything and someone who makes the rules, he can break the rules. He has the authority to do anything he feels like doing, he or she feels like doing. But I think that's not the kind of authority that Baba talks about when he uses the term almighty authority. And I think the first meaning of the almighty authority is that he reveals to us knowledge of how things work. But it doesn't mean he has the authority to change the dynamics of how they work. But he reveals the knowledge to us of how they work. So for instance, he says, I come into the body of Brahman, I give you knowledge, I don't do it with inspiration. So that's a form of authority, and I'm revealing to you the clarity of how things are done. And so I think that this is the almighty authority, one of the aspects of which Baba reveals knowledge of the truth. And the truth is, this is how it operates, or this is how it works. I think the other aspect of authority is the purification or the cleansing of the soul, or the soul returning to its original and eternal state. And what Baba is saying that here is a method of man mana bhav through which you, the soul, can return to your original state of being. You need to consider yourself to be a soul and to connect your intellect, yoga or man mana bhav, all your thoughts, to just one being, to just God, and then this moving of energy from Baba into the soul is able to return to its original state of being. So that is another sort of authority in which Baba is the only one through whom souls can be purified. So I think that this is my understanding of when Baba says, I am the almighty authority. One, he has the might, the strength to replenish souls, and the souls can return to their original state of being. And secondly, he has the might, he has the knowledge that he reveals to us on how things work in terms of creation, in terms of sustenance, and in terms of transformation.
Great. So I think every question opens the door to a whole session on these topics. Very fascinating. Two quick little questions about the technicality of the practice. You can both add one idea. The question is, I think the formula are all related and connected. In my practice, I usually combine them. Is it a good practice? For example, I'm a soul, the pure child of Baba, a guest in this world and this body, walk into the subtle region, receiving Baba's drishti. And so is it a good idea to combine those formulas, or are they going to mess up the whole thing? And another question related also to the practice. Is someone saying, I practice also the formula Atamrtvela. Is it recommended, or would there be any side effects? As once I'm in the office, it's not practical to find 30 minutes meditation time. So a quick little insight about merging all the formulas into one, or practicing Atamrtvela. Judy, you want to very briefly answer that?
Sure. So first, this idea of combining. I think to make it our own, we have to, at some point, you know, begin to play with it and get creative and all that. But I think it's a good idea to start with the formulas as offered, and to spend to at least the beginning, to get an awareness of the discrete states that are being talked about. What does it mean, for example, in this case, what does it mean, what's the experience of being bodiless? You know, to really get your head and heart around that one, and then move on to the next, and then to the next. Once you've got that clarity, you can feel the difference in the states, you can move back and forth and experience them, then I think playing with it and making it yours and being creative and combining it can be wonderful. I don't see any drawback to that, but I wouldn't start there. I would move to that. Second question about in the office. I always think you don't need to do it for 30 minutes, right? I mean, that's a proposal, and you can do that in your own home. I think you'd have trouble explaining to the boss where you went for 30 minutes
when you were off the clock. But you don't need 30 minutes, right? I mean, if you take a walk down the hall to the the bathroom, you go to get a glass of water, a cup of coffee, or whatever, you can take those minutes and return to what you started in the morning. So I think, again, it's about being creative and thoughtful. The whole point of spiritual practice is to move from kind of an intentional student into where this is your condition. This is your state of mind and state of heart, where you are this. You become virtuous in this way. You are serving all the time. So eventually it needs to be embedded in all parts of your life.
Great. Yeah, to a one-minute question, follow-up of the drishti idea. When a person who gives drishti is showing lower level of behavior in terms of their thought, words, if I'm aware of that, what should I do? And second, is it always necessary to move your eyes while process of sharing drishti is going on? As I feel when eyes are moved, you become conscious to focus on other person at other place. I'm not sure what I mean about moving your eyes, but I guess second, it is always necessary to move your eyes while process of sharing drishti is going on. As I feel when eyes are moved, you become conscious to focus on other person at other place. And insight on that, drishti, and you feel that the person sitting on the stage lost his or her stage, what do you do? And
Baba always says that the eyes will deceive us the most, and we will be deceived by the eyes. So that in itself is a revealing piece of information, I would say. So
drishti is a correction of eyesight.
Drishti is a correction of the awareness I have. And so if I am looking at someone and I am experiencing that someone is having a bad day or is disturbed about something, then the drishti is not to correct the person. That would not be divine drishti. Maybe that would just be drishti. I'm looking, I'm observing, I'm seeing, I'm judging, I'm hoping what can I do? I'm asking questions of the why, how, when, where. But that for me is not divine drishti. Divine drishti is what do I need to be at this moment so that I can offer something through my drishti, or I can share something through my drishti that would make a difference. I think that would be considered divine drishti. So I kind of move beyond what is happening in front of me, not to deny it. I know it. I see it. But then after seeing it, what is the awareness? What's the ashariri relationship I should be having with my eyes so that I can share something that would make a difference? That would be my answer to that question. And secondly, when we conduct meditation, I think the person is saying we move our eyes from one person to the other person. And isn't that distracting? In other words, am I losing my connection with Baba, and is that connection being transferred to the person I'm giving my drishti to? Now, if this would be, it would require, giving drishti is not just connecting to the people. It is actually maintaining my connection to Baba and becoming an instrument for Baba to share with whoever it is I'm making eye contact with. So it's not me who's sharing with the other person, but Baba is using me as an instrument to share whatever he has to share with the people I'm having the eye connection with. So that's my practice there. So I do not get distracted by the person I am sharing the drishti with when I'm conducting meditation.
Thank you. Maybe Google will come up one day with a new pair of glasses where you can use them to give drishti without moving your eyes and keeping your stage very high. So we'll see. Let's keep checking on new technology coming out. A last quick little question. I think there are a few questions that are very deep questions on Gyan about sweet silence, deep silence, and absolute silence, and another one asking why the cycle is 5,000 years. So I think before we move into that in 2 minutes, why don't we just conclude with the brief comment that I think is quite essential in this practice, is the idea of repetition. And the whole project has been based on repeating initially, it was mentioned 108 times a formula. I think it's still very relevant if you can briefly, because we have only 2-3 minutes left, Gayatri and Judy, but just insight about the power of this concept, which is geared towards repeating or going over and over and over and over. Should we not underestimate that, I guess, is it not? Maybe Judy to start and then Gayatri?
Well, okay, so the way that I am working with this is not to count the number of times that I invoke this state, because I don't want to be in yoga with counting, and I might be, it might be my limitation there. What I do is I'll take the state that I'm kind of concentrating on, and I will put myself into that state. I'll think about it first, and I'll put myself into that state, and I will sustain that state as long as possible. And then when I become aware that I have stepped out of that state, then I will either return to that state again or move to the next part of the triad. But I'm doing it more as a function of time than I am as a function of repeating the state, because my aim is to have a sustained state of consciousness that's elevated. So the longer that I can sustain it at a deep level and both understand it but also experience it, I feel like I'm getting the mind and the heart and the intellect to cooperate in the transformation process.
Wonderful. And Gayatri, do you want to have a last thought? I know some will be moving into Merli time, others will go to bed, I think, in the other side of the world. So what's your last thought on this idea of repetition and going over the same formula?
For me, it builds my concentration. I felt that one of the greatest benefits of the repetition of the formula was for me to realize that how little the intellect's concentration is and how easily the intellect can get bored. And so the repetition of these formulas for me, especially at Amrit Vela, builds a very deep sense of concentration. And once that concentration is inculcated in relation to these formula, to this particular formula being repeated, what happens is that it creates an experience within me, and that experience becomes the foundation to take me back throughout the day, periodically, as I'm doing action, to the experience of the formula. And I found that to be very helpful.
Thank you very, very much to both of you. And this was meant to be a little heads up towards the next webinar we'll have. And Sharon will be talking about it briefly now. But before we let you go, Judy Ben and Gayatri Ben, just on behalf of all those listening, I think just a profound namaste from the bottom of our hearts. I think we appreciate very much this process where we have to articulate awareness, understanding, and the experience in a newer way all the time. And I think we really appreciate that you're helping the whole family to move forward and experience in a deeper level these beautiful points Baba has been giving us for so long now. So thank you very, very much to both of you, and particularly for anyone who by mistake has seen the Star Wars, for example, who may be very confused about many different worlds. I think you clarified exactly where to go in our meditation. So thank you so much.
Brother Eric, thank you very much. Your light is a gift.
Shireen, which I'll let conclude this webinar with some announcements, and Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Thank you, all three of you, Gayatri Ben, Judy Ben, and Brother Eric. All three of you were wonderful in your own way, and you added a richness to the conversation, which was very enlightening for me, and I'm sure for everyone else. I am here to make a small announcement, and then I'm going to hand it over to Helen. My announcement is that our next webinar is going to be next Saturday on the 23rd of January. It's going to be the same time as this time, which would be 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. New York time. And there are other times, the rest of the time zone, but the webinar has a way to calculate your time. And it will be Sister Mira from Malaysia. And we've had some sweet complaints from Asia that the webinars are at a time when it's too late for them, but we are trying to not only accommodate the people, the spiritual resources on the webinar, but also making sure that everyone has a chance to be on it. So at some point, someone will be sleeping. So we apologize if you're not able to listen directly. They are going to be recorded, and they are downloadable on our SoundCloud, and you will be able to get all that information on the email if you're subscribed. And also about subscriptions and emails and all those details, Helen will make an announcement right now. Thank you, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
Om Shanti, everyone, and a wonderful webinar. Special thanks to Sister Gayatri, Sister Judy, Brother Eric. And everyone, we really do appreciate your feedback and what you're sending to us. It's helping us to find the best way to get the formula endpoints to you. We've made a few changes, and now you can get the whole week's points. They are available on the Sustenance website, sustenance.brahmakumaris.org, and there you will see in English, Hindi, and Spanish, we have the week available for download. You'll also see the daily points there, and they're also available on Facebook just in case it's not coming through the email properly. Again, if you have any questions, just feel free to email us. Thank you. Om Shanti.
Thank you.